Acts 22, picking up where we left off last week. Acts 22, I think last week we made it all the way through verse 16. Last time we left off with Paul, Paul had gone to Jerusalem, he had accepted a vow, he shaved his head, he went into the temple, he served out his 7 days of fasting and prayer and cleansing. At the end of it, they sacrificed an animal. He was showing the Jerusalem elders and the Christians in Jerusalem who were also zealous for the law that he was not anti-law, that for the Christian Jews, he was being as the Christian Jews, because the Jerusalem converted Jews were continuing to try to keep some of the Mosaic standards and the Mosaic traditions in their religion. It was impossible for them to just completely give up everything they'd ever known, everything they'd ever been. Instead, they inculcated Christianity into their Judaism, and the Jerusalem church continued and always did have. You can read all about it with James and the group from James that came to Galatia. There was always that conflict between the Jewish segment of Christianity and the Gentile segment of Christianity. And Paul, as the apostle to the Gentiles, always told the Gentiles, look, you don't have to try to keep the Mosaic law, primarily because you were never under it. It wasn't your covenant. You weren't there at Sinai. God never specified you to participate in it in any way. And so for you to come to Christ and then also try to keep Moses is completely antithetical, so don't do it. However, when he went to Jerusalem and saw the Christian Jews that were also keeping the Mosaic traditions, rather than cause a big stir and a fight, he became as them. And he went in, kept a vow, went to the temple, ceremonially cleansed himself, and sacrificed an animal to show that he was in fellowship with these guys. Well, while he was in the temple, one of the rabble-rousers there saw him and started yelling, "That's that man who's bringing Gentiles into the temple," and a riot broke out into the streets. And the elders came, and a garrison of Romans came and tried to break it up. They took Paul away, believing that he was a political rabble-rouser, and he turned and spoke to them in Greek, which surprised them, because they thought he was Egyptian. He spoke to them in Greek. They paused for a moment, and then he said, "Let me talk to the crowd." And he turned to the crowd, spoke to the crowd in Hebrew, and in speaking to the crowd in Hebrew, he began what would be chapter 22, and said, "Men and brethren, and fathers, hear ye my defense, which I make unto you." And when they heard him speak in the Hebrew tongue, they kept the silence. He said, "I am verily a man which am a Jew. I was born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia. I was brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel. I was taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and I was zealous toward God, as are all you this day. And I persecuted this way, Christianity, unto the death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women, as also the high priest will bear me witness." Because the high priest that was high priest at that moment was the same one that had put letters into Paul's hand, giving him the right to go and persecute Christians. So he said, "Check with him, he'll tell you. And all the estate of the elders, from whom also I received letters unto the brethren, I went to Damascus to bring them which were bound unto Jerusalem to be punished. It came to pass that as I made my journey, and when it was come nigh, when I was come nigh unto Damascus about noon, suddenly there showed from heaven a great light round about me. I fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying, 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' And I answered, 'Who are you, Lord?' And he said unto me, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecute.' And they that were with me saw indeed the light. They were afraid, but they heard not the voice of him that spoke to me. And I said, 'What shall I do, Lord?' And the Lord said unto me, 'Arise, go into Damascus. There it shall be told thee of all things which are appointed for you to do.' And when I could not see for the glory of the light, being led by the hand of them that were with me, I came into Damascus to one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, having a good report of all the Jews that dwelt there. He came unto me, and he stood, and he said unto me, 'Brother Saul, receive your sight.' And that same hour I received my sight. I looked on him, and he said, 'The God of our fathers has chosen you, that you should know his will and see the just one and should hear the voice of his mouth. For thou shalt be his witness unto all men of what thou hast seen and heard. And now why do you tarry? Arise, be baptized, wash away your sins, calling on the name of the Lord.'" That's how far we got last week with several side roads and left turns and extra comment. So we're at verse 17. "It came to pass that when I was come again to Jerusalem, even while I was praying in the temple, that I was in a trance, and I saw him saying to me," this was Christ that he saw, "said, 'Make haste, get you quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive your testimony concerning me. I got a comment on that. This is Jesus speaking again. If every man has the independent free will to choose or to decide whether or not to accept Christ, and everybody has a fair shot at receiving Christ, all they need is, as we talked about last week, adequate inducement. Here is Jesus one more time, if you want to talk about election, if you want to talk about limited atonement, if you want to talk about God's absolute sovereignty and saving who he will, here he is telling Paul, get up and leave Jerusalem. They're not going to hear you. They're not going to believe you. Get up and leave here. So he's telling the disciple who is carrying the gospel of salvation by grace without works to get out of Jerusalem because the people there won't hear it. Now that really undermines all those theologies of free will and everybody having an opportunity to hear and everybody gets to make a decision. Here's one more example of Jesus telling his own disciple who's carrying the word not to preach it here, to get up and leave. They're not going to hear you. Get up and go. And I said, Lord, Lord, they know that I imprisoned and I beat in every synagogue them that believed on you. And when the blood of the martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by, and I consented to his death, and I held the raiments of them that slew him. And he said to me, depart, for I will send you far hence unto the Gentiles. They gave audience to his words, and then they lifted up all their voices, and they said, away with this fellow, away with him from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. How dare he say that the Son of God told him not to preach in Jerusalem? This is Jerusalem. This is the heart of God country, for heaven's sake. We got the temple. We're the Jews. We're the chosen people. How dare you say that Jesus told you not to preach here? You need to die. And as they cried out, they tore their clothes, they threw dust in the air, and the chief captain commanded that Paul be brought into the castle. And he bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. That, by the way, is saying we're going to torture him till he tells us the truth. We're going to tear off his clothes, we're going to put his hands in a rack, and we're going to beat him across the back with 39 lashes, and then he'll tell us the truth of the matter. And as they bound him with thongs around his hands to pull his arms out, Paul said to a centurion that stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is an uncondemned Roman citizen? Because freeborn Roman citizens had rights that Jews didn't have. And they assumed him just to be a Jew. And now for the first time in the book of Acts, we see Paul pronounce that his heritage is not strictly Hebrew. That he has a Hebrew parent who raised him at the feet of Gamaliel, and he has a freeborn Roman parent somewhere who he is now announcing his freeborn Roman status. Once again, God in his cleverness, he made a guy who would be a Roman citizen so that he could get all the way to Caesar, which he's going to do, and yet at the same time be a Hebrew of the Hebrews who would study at the feet of Gamaliel, who would be completely versed in all of the Old Testament scriptures so that he could teach and debate and battle with the Jews, and could teach and debate and battle with the Gentiles, and was equally at home with both of them, and yet could not be entrapped by either of them. When the Hebrews come to get him, he appeals to Rome. When the Romans come to get him, he appeals to the Hebrews. This guy is in a great place. God had his man for the moment to spread his gospel. So, verse 26, when the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, take heed what you're doing here, because this man is a Roman. The chief captain came and said to him, tell me, are you a Roman? And he said, yeah. Y-E-A? Yeah. That's how you pronounce that. People think it's yea. Yeah, yeah. And the chief captain answered, and he said, with a great sum of money, I obtained my freedom. And Paul said, yeah, but I was freeborn. See, now the centurion was at one time a slave. But with a great deal of money, he bought his freedom, either through his work or somebody else paying his price. He said, I'm a Roman citizen, but I paid money for it. What did you have to pay for it? And he said, I didn't pay nothing. I am a freeborn Roman citizen. That means one of his parents was a freeborn Roman citizen. Then straightway they departed from him, which should have examined him. In other words, they didn't scourge him and they didn't examine him. And the chief captain also was afraid because now he knew that Paul was a Roman and because he had put him in bonds. He had tied the guy up and got ready to scourge him when he was a freeborn citizen who wasn't accused of anything. This guy's going to lose his office if anybody hears about this, so he's scared of Paul now. On the morrow, the next day, because he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and he commanded the chief priests and all the council to come appear. And they brought Paul down, and they set him before them. So the chief captain now, who wants to know the truth of it all, says, I got to find out what's going here. I'm going to call the leaders of the Jews in to stand before me and give account for why they're so upset about this guy. Chapter 23. And Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to slap him in the mouth. Because he said, I've stood before God in good conscience up to this day. But they hated that he was preaching Christ. And they said, you cannot have a good conscience and preach this Christ at the same time. So Ananias had him slapped for saying it. It's pretty insulting. Then said Paul to him, God shall smite you, you whited wall. Where'd he get that, by the way? You know what that means, you whited wall? Remember when Jesus spoke to the Pharisees and he said, you are like whited sepulchers. You look all clean on the outside, but inside you are all uncleanness and dead men's bones. You hypocrites. So Paul said the exact same thing to him. Now, by the way, when people are already angry at you and slapping you, it's not the best time to tell them that they are hypocrites. But Paul stood up to him and said, God will smite you, you whited wall. For you sit in judgment over me after the law, and you command me to be smitten contrary to the law? I have a clean conscience before God, but your conscience now cannot be clean because you claim to be defending the law, and yet you're hitting me, which is contrary to the law. You hypocrite.
This Ananias, the high priest, is
No, this is Ananias, the same high priest that condemned Jesus, if that's what you were about to ask. Yes, there were two converts, Ananias and Sapphira, who were the ones that lied about their giving and dropped dead, which is a power I haven't yet seemed to manage in this group.
What about this Ananias that told Paul in 22 that he was going to do this work for God?
No. In fact, he was in a different city.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was told to go to Damascus. He wasn't in Jerusalem. He was in Damascus. Ananias was apparently quite a popular name, and a name that I'm glad has fallen out of popular use. No, different Ananias. He was the same chief priest, high priest, who condemned Jesus, but he was not the one who prayed for Paul. Popular name, though. Replaced in our modern lexicon now by the name Bob. So... I'm sorry.
Why not?
I can't help myself. Verse 4. And they that stood by said to him, Do you revile God's high priest? Then said Paul, I that wist not, means I wish not, or I would prefer not, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, Thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other were Pharisees, he cried out in the council. Now, you're not going to understand this unless you know the difference between Pharisees and Sadducees. Do you know what it is? And it's not that they were sad, you see. Okay, go on from that. Move past that now.
The physical resurrection.
Yeah,
they argued over the physical resurrection. The Pharisees believed in a physical resurrection. The Sadducees did not. When Paul perceived that they were Sadducees and Pharisees, he cried out in the council and said, Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, I am the son of a Pharisee, and the hope of the hope and the resurrection of the dead am I called into question. And when he had said this, verse 7, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, nor are there angels, nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees Their part arose, and they strove, saying, "We find no evil in this man. He's a Pharisee. He agrees with us. But if the Spirit or an angel had spoken to him, let us not fight against God." So all of a sudden, they're on his side. Oh, well, if he's a Pharisee, and he's a Pharisee of the Pharisees, and he agrees with the resurrection, he agrees with angels, then we don't find any problem with this guy. He's all right with us. And when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul would be pulled into pieces by all of them, commanded that the soldiers would go down and take him by force out of the mob from among them and bring him into the castle. So Paul escaped it by getting them so angry and getting them to argue doctrine that they forgot about him and started tearing at him to the point where the Roman garrison had to go in and physically take him out of the mob and put him up in the castle. And that night, the Lord stood by Paul and he said, "Be of good cheer, Paul. Paul's been through it. Paul's having a tough time." And Jesus showed up and said, "Be of good cheer. It's all okay. This is working out exactly like I meant for it to. For you have testified of me in Jerusalem, and so must you also bear witness at Rome." You're heading for Rome, believe me. You're going to Rome. The same way you testified at Jerusalem, you're going to go to Rome. Now, remember last week we saw that when Paul met with some of the prophets of the day, they came and tore his girdle off and tied his hands and said, "You're going to go into Rome bound like this and delivered into the hands of the Gentiles." Paul knew that his trip to Rome was not going to be a happy trip. And here's the Lord showing up again and saying, "Yeah, you're heading for Rome, and it's not going to go any better for you than it did at Jerusalem, but you're going. But be of good cheer." And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together, and they bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. And they were more than 40 which made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and the elders, and they said, "We have bound ourselves with a great curse, that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. Now therefore, ye with the council, signify to the chief captain that he bring him down unto you tomorrow, as though you would inquire something more perfectly concerning him, and we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him." So 40 men got together, 40 hard-minded, hard-set Jews who wanted him dead got together and said, "We will not eat or drink, any of us of the 40, until Paul is dead." So they went to the chief priest and they said, "Do this, call for Paul tomorrow, and when they bring Paul to you, we'll jump him in the way and we'll kill him for you." But here's the interesting thing. Again, providence of God, just lucky break. It's just a lucky break. Verse 16, when Paul's sister's son, now we know that Paul's sister lived in Jerusalem, piece of information we didn't have before. Turns out that Paul also has a nephew, and Paul's nephew just happened to be in the temple where he overheard this. Paul's sister's son heard that they were lying in wait, and he went and he entered into the castle and he told Paul. So Paul called one of the centurions and said, "Bring this young man to the chief captain, for he has a certain thing to tell him." So he took him, and he brought him to the chief captain, and he said, "Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto you, who hath something to say unto thee." Then the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And he said, "The Jews have agreed to desire thee that thou would bring down Paul tomorrow into the council, as though you would inquire somewhat of him more perfectly. But do not yield unto them, for there lie in wait for him of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for a promise from you." So the chief captain then let the young man depart, and he charged him and said, "See thou tell no man what you have told me about these things." And he called unto him 2 centurions, saying, "Make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, that's 70 horsemen, that's 200 foot soldiers, and 200 spearmen, and have them all in the 3rd hour of the night." It's 9 o'clock at night. That's how many people it took to protect Paul to get him out of Jerusalem and get him safely to Caesarea. Can you imagine? Look at the riot this man caused. He walked in Jerusalem, and just simply by being there and showing up in their temple, taking the vow with them, he hadn't yet even preached Christ. He was there taking a vow when a man stood up and said, "That's him. We hate him, kill him. And then they have to guard him with Roman centurions. And the only time he gets to preach to them is in bonds on the steps of the castle. As he speaks to them for the first time and mentions Christ, they hate him all the more. And finally, they have to take him out, secret him out by night. 200 foot soldiers, 70, that's 270, another 470 soldiers it took at 9 o'clock at night to get him out and provide for them beasts to ride on, that they may set Paul on the beast and bring him safe unto Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this matter. Claudius Lysias unto the most excellent governor Felix sends greeting. Now, Felix, the governor, is the governor of that whole area of Judea, but he has set up his throne in Caesarea because the only throne in Jerusalem area is occupied by the king, who we're going to meet soon, this Agrippa II. That's an interesting character. This guy, Felix, is the guy who took over the governorship of that area when Pontius Pilate committed suicide. Best tradition is that he committed suicide, but Felix is the guy who came up in his stead. So this is a guy who's on the level of Pontius Pilate now, ruling that Middle Eastern area, and particularly ruling over Judea, even though they have their own puppet king in there, who is Agrippa, who we'll get to. So he wrote and said, Claudius Lysias, unto the most excellent governor Felix, sends greetings. This man was taken of the Jews, and should have been killed by them. Then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth unto their council. And when I perceived, whom I perceived to be accused of questions of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or bonds. And when it was told me how that the Jews laid wait for this man, I sent straightway to thee and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before you what they have against him. Farewell. In other words, I don't know what to do here. I got riots in the streets about this guy. I am sending him to you with these 470 soldiers, and then I'd like you to send for the leaders of the Jews to come up and appear before you and tell the tale, because since you're the governor over that region, maybe it won't break into a riot if you control this. Farewell. Good luck is basically that. Hope it works. See ya. Then the soldiers, as it was commanded, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. And on the morrow, they left the horsemen to go with him, and they returned to the castle, who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before this governor Felix. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province Paul was. And when he understood that he was of Cilicia, he said, I will hear thee. He said, when thine accusers are come, then I'll hear you. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. Now we got to talk about this. There was an Idumean king who ruled over that whole area of Samaria, Jerusalem, and the whole Judean area. He's known as Herod the Great. It was that Herod the Great, though he was not a Jew, he floated rumors that he had Jewish parents, hearkening back to the Babylonish captivity. That was the only place where he could trace any Jewish roots to himself. But he was put into place by the Roman emperors as a puppet king to rule over Judea. Herod the Great is the one who is responsible for the slaughter of the innocents. He's the one who killed all the children, three and under, when he was trying to kill Jesus, when the wise men came to him and said that they knew that the king of the Jews was born. And he being the king of the Jews, the most frightening thing he could think of was for there to be an actual king of the Jews born. So he said, you know, you go tell me when you find him. And when they didn't return to him and years had passed, he sent out an edict to kill all of the children in an attempt to kill Jesus. At that time, then, the angel of the Lord came to Joseph and Mary and said, flee into Egypt and take the kid with you. Not that they use the word kid. Go into Egypt and wait there till I tell you. Well, meanwhile, while they were in Egypt, Herod the Great died. And the angel came and said, Herod's dead. You can go back now. And they made their way back to Nazareth. Now, Herod had a couple of different sons. There were a couple different offshoots of Herod the Great's family. And Herod the Great's family had a Jewish link through one of his Jewish wives. But then he also had a heritage that came through a Samaritan woman. So this was an Idumean and a Samaritan, so there was no Judaism in their family. It was through that family tree that the next Herod came up. He was called Herod Antipas. And where you see here where it says that Paul was taken to Antipatris, that means the city of Antipas. That's why he was taken to Herod's judgment hall. Herod, by the way, just means king. So there was the great king, Herod the Great. Then there was Antipas, who became king. So he was King Antipas was his name. Now, he had brothers by the Jewish wife who were living and being educated in Rome, one of whom was named Agrippa. And Agrippa, when he got to Rome, and was a very clever politician, and saw the way that the power structure was developing in Rome, saw that the Caesar of the time was very old, and he saw and got to know Caligula. And he figured that Caligula was going to be the next emperor, going to be the next Roman Caesar. And so he took sides with Caligula against the Caesar, and so he was imprisoned for it. So here you've got the son of, the direct Jewish son, through a Jewish mother, of King Herod the Great, in a prison in Rome for siding with Caligula. Then Caligula murdered Caesar, rose through treachery to the throne, brought Agrippa out and made him his like second in command. And as a reward for sticking with him through all this, ends up giving him that whole area of Judea, and he dethrones Herod Antipas. In the middle of all that history I just spelled out for you, and there's more coming, because then that Agrippa had a son and a daughter, Agrippa and Bernice, or Benici, depending on how you want to pronounce it, a son and daughter who are now Jewish in their heritage, because this more Jewish descendant of Herod the Great ends up ruling over Judea. And they end up, what's the good word, cohabitating. He's 17, she's older, and they, in joint rule, end up ruling over Jerusalem and Judea and Caesarea and that whole area as teenage brother and sister. And Paul is going to wind up in front of that 17-year-old guy. I mean, you read these names, you go past the names, and you don't know who they are or how they got there. But the ultimate ruler through all this history that Paul's going to end up standing in front of as the years tick off is this 17-year-old Jewish descendant of Herod the Great, who has usurped the throne from his non-Jewish uncle. And he's a 17-year-old who is shacking up with his sister, and they are joint rulers over that area, which is a scandal to the Jews in the area and to the Romans as well, who would like to see him bumped off, and that happens later too. Paul is in the middle of all that political intrigue. I told you all that to say this is what Paul's in the middle of. And they're going to start throwing Paul around from one to the other to the other to the other, because none of them really know what to do with him, because he is, after all, a Roman citizen. But they want to keep peace in the region, because the one thing that Caesar will not stand for is riots in the street anywhere in his dominion, and he's going to hold them responsible for making sure that there are no riots, which is why when there was a riot in Jerusalem, they said, get Paul out of here and send him to Caesarea. And now there's going to be trouble in Caesarea. Wherever Paul goes, there's trouble, and each of these successive rulers want to get rid of him. And it's in the process of getting rid of him that he ends up in front of Caesar in Rome. In Caesarea, chapter 24, he said, I'll hear when your accusers come, and he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. After 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, descended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. The orator there is basically just an attorney. You do the talking for us. You go in and make the case. And when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse Paul, saying, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence. Butter up, butter up, butter up. We accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou would hear us. Of thy clemency, just a few words. Well, this guy's good. He's just putting it on. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition, among all the Jews throughout the world and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also has gone about to profane the temple, whom we took, and we would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain Lysias came upon us and with great violence took him out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come to you, by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, For as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem to worship, and they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues, nor in the city raising up people, neither can they prove any of the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto you, that after the way, which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things that were written in the law and in the prophets. And I have hope toward God, which they themselves also would allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust, and herein, and to bring an offering, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with the multitude, neither with the tumult, whom ought to have been here before thee, and they should be here objecting if they have anything against me, or else let these same here say, if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council, except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among the men, saying, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called in question by you this day. And when Felix heard all these things, having now a more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, when Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter. And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul, let him have his liberty, that he should not forbid any of his acquaintances to minister or to come unto him. So he goes and appears before Felix. And while he's there in front of Felix, Felix says, I want to hear the whole story. They bring on the orator who lays these charges in front of Felix, and Paul stands up and says, prove one. And they have no proof. So he says, well, then, I want to know the end of it. Bring Lysias, the chief captain, the one who brought you here. Let me hear what he has to say about it, and then I'll decide once and for all. Verse 24. We now meet Drusilla. After certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul. And he heard him concerning the faith of Christ. Now think about what's happening here. God has just set Paul up to preach Christianity to the most powerful man in that Middle Eastern, Sumerian, Judean area. And now Paul, through all the riots and all the near beatings and all the stuff that's happened, he's now standing in front of the most powerful man in that Middle Eastern area and preaching Christ, exactly the way Christ said it would happen. As Paul reasoned about righteousness and about temperance and about judgment to come, Felix trembled. And he answered, go your way for this time, and when I have a convenient season, I'll call for you. And then he hoped that money should be given of him for Paul. What that means is, if you were a prisoner standing before Felix and you were being heard, you could buy your freedom. You could buy your way out of court. And once he heard what Paul said, it scared him. When he heard about judgment to come, and he heard about righteousness and God's judgment, he hoped that somebody would give Paul the money to free him and let him go. He wanted Paul off the hook. He did not want to have to judge this man. And he hoped that somebody would pay the ransom price to get this guy off the hook, which Jesus didn't let anybody do because Paul was on his way to Caesar. Go your way, and when I have a convenient season, I'll call for you. And he hoped that money should have been given to him of Paul, that he might loosen, let him go. Wherefore he sent for him the more often, and he communed with him. That means that he started getting together with Paul on a regular basis and saying to him, tell me more, tell me more. Him and his Jewish wife wanted to know more. Keep teaching me, keep teaching me. He had Paul teaching him. If you want to know something about Christianity, Felix, this governor, had Paul himself day after day coming in and teaching him about Christianity. But after 2 years, Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. Now, that's a very cryptic thing. You have to go back and read Middle Eastern history to know what that says. Felix died unexpectedly after 2 years of keeping Paul there. And Felix kept him there for 2 years bound as a favor to the Jews to keep the riots from happening in the streets. He couldn't go back to Jerusalem. He couldn't cause any problem as long as he was in bonds. But while he was in bonds in Caesarea, he had people coming and going. He had his freedom. It was like a house arrest. And his people could come and go. And he wrote his letters, and he carried on his ministry there. And then while he was there, under the protection of Felix's hand, Felix died. And so they sent the new governor. The new governor was sent by King Agrippa, and it was this guy, Festus, who came and took over that Middle Eastern region. And when he gets there, there's this guy who's been in bonds for 2 years, and he doesn't know why. He didn't know from Paul. He has no idea what Paul's doing there. So verse 27 said, after 2 years, Pontius Festus came into Felix's room. It's actually Felix's estate, took over his chair. And Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, had left Paul there still in bonds. But when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea into Jerusalem. And then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul. And they besought him and desired a favor against him, that he would send for Paul to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. A couple years later, they still know where Paul is. They still hate him, and they still want him dead. So they ask Festus, since he doesn't know any better, for a favor. And they say, do us a favor, if you would. There's this guy, Paul. You've had him for a couple years. Why don't you just bring him down to us? We'll take care of him. You just bring him to us, and I'll be fine. And we'll take care of him. We'll kill him. I'll be fine. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would shortly depart to Caesarea. Let them, therefore, he said, which among you be able, go to Caesarea with me, and then you accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he then went down into Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews that had come down from Jerusalem stood round about, and they laid many grievous complaints against Paul that they could not prove. Verse 8, while he answered for himself, Paul answered for himself and said, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet even against Caesar have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure or a favor, answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? In other words, I'll go to Jerusalem, you go to Jerusalem, I'll sit in judgment over these things, they'll be able to accuse you, I'll hear the whole case. Are you willing to go to Jerusalem? Paul knows the last place he wants to go is Jerusalem. Go to Jerusalem, you're dead. Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I don't refuse to die. But if there be none of these things whereof they accuse me, then no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal to Caesar. It went right over Festus's head. Take me to Rome. Paul's going to Rome. That's the point of this story. We got to the end of the book of Romans, and we're about to read a bunch of names that aren't going to make sense unless you know how Paul got to Rome. He got there as a prisoner. He got there by appealing through Festus all the way up to Caesar. But you don't make the jump from one to the next. First, you got to go through a few other people. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered and said, have you appealed to Caesar? Well then, unto Caesar you'll go. Then after certain days, verse 13, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to salute this new governor, Festus. This is the 17-year-old boy I told you about. And his sister. Not good. They've come to salute the new governor of the area, because they are, after all, the rulers of the Judean area over the Jews. They're the descendants of the Herods. When they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king Agrippa, saying, there is a certain man left in bonds here by Felix, of whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have a judgment against him, to whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before that which he is accused, have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime that was laid against him. In other words, he hasn't had a trial yet, so we're not just going to deliver him up to be killed. Therefore, when they were come here, without any delay, on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat, and I commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation of such things as I expected to hear, or as I supposed. But they had certain questions against him about their own superstition, their own religion, and of the one called Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirms to now be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would like to go to Jerusalem and there be judged of all these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. So then Agrippa said to Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, bring him to me. On the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, his sister, with great pomp, they entered into the place of the hearing, and the chief captains and the principal men of the city and Festus all commanded Paul that he was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man, about whom all the multitudes of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus Caesar, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto Caesar. When you send him, you got to send him with a letter. I'm sending him to you, and here's why. So I got nothing to write. I don't know what to say to Caesar. He's appealed to Caesar. I'm going to send him. Help me out here. Of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and specifically before you, O King Agrippa, that after examination has been had, I might have something to write to Caesar. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes against him. I'm going to send him bound all the way to Caesar. I got to write something that says, here's why. So he says, now Agrippa, you are after all, now think about the political intrigue here again. Agrippa was the Jewish heir, Jewish descendant of Herod the Great. So he would have some sense of the Jewish laws and the Jewish customs and all that, which Festus didn't have. So it makes complete sense now for Festus to say, this is concerning their religion and their traditions, and I don't get it. So would you please sit and listen to him, and then when you understand it, having a Jewish background and heritage, you can tell me what in the world to write to Caesar, because I don't understand their laws. So you can see the political intrigue here and why he did what he did. We're nearly done. Trust me. So then Agrippa said to Paul, I find this amazing, that Paul, of all people, stood in judgment before a 17-year-old and his sister. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, you are permitted to speak for yourself. Then Paul stretched forth his hand, and he answered him, I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day before you, touching all the things whereof I am accused of the Jews, especially because I know you to be an expert in all the customs and the questions which are among the Jews. Wherefore, I beseech you to hear me patiently. My manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nation at Jerusalem, all the Jews know that, which knew me from the beginning. If they would testify, they would have to admit that is what he's saying. They'd have to testify that they've known me from the beginning. I was raised in Jerusalem, raised a Jew, that there's nothing they can find in my boyhood that they can complain against, or the way I was raised. And that after the straitest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee. And now I stand and am judged for the hope of the promise made of God unto our fathers, unto which promise our 12 tribes, instantly serving God day and night, hope to come. For which hope's sake, King Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews. I got to make one quick comment. This is after Pentecost that this is all taking place by a good number of years. he mentions all 12 tribes. I find that interesting. And he said that all 12 tribes live instantly serving God day and night in the hope to come. And he didn't say God has cast them off and is no longer interested in the Jews because the church has become Israel. He didn't say anything of the sort. Unto which promise our 12 tribes instantly serving God day and night hope to come. For which hope's sake, King Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews. Why should it be thought a thing incredible with you that God would raise the dead? I verily thought within myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth, which things I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints did I shut up in prison, having received authority from the chief priests. And when they were put to death, I gave my voice against them, and I punished them often in every synagogue, and I compelled them to blaspheme. And being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them even unto the strange cities. Whereupon I went into Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priests. And at midday, O king, I saw in the way a light from heaven above the brightness of the sun shining round about me and them that journeyed with me. And when we were all fallen to the ground, I heard a voice speak to me, saying in the Hebrew tongue, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the pricks. And I said, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you persecute. But rise and stand upon thy feet, for I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister and a witness both of these things which thou hast seen, and of those things in the which I will appear unto thee, delivering thee from the people and from the Gentiles, unto whom now I send you, to open their eyes, and to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins, and inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith that is in me. Whereupon, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient unto the heavenly vision, but showed first unto them at Damascus and at Jerusalem and throughout all the coasts of Judea, and then to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God and do works meet for repentance. For these causes the Jews caught me in the temple and went about to kill me. Having therefore obtained help of God, I continue unto this day, witnessing both to small and to great, saying none other things than those which the prophets and Moses did say should come, that Christ should suffer, and that he should be the first to rise from the dead, and that he should show light unto the people and to the Gentiles. And as he thus spake for himself, Festus cried out with a loud voice, Paul, you are beside yourself. Much learning has made you mad. But he said, I am not mad, most noble Festus. But I speak forth the words of truth and of soberness. For the king knows. This is interesting. He's turning King Agrippa against King Festus here. This is an interesting little move he's making. For the king knows of all these things, before whom also I speak freely. For I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him. For this thing was not done in a corner. King Agrippa, believest the prophets? I know that you do believe. And then Agrippa said to Paul, Almost you persuade me to be a Christian. And Paul said, I would to God that not only you, but also all that hear me this day were both almost and altogether such as I am, with the exception of these bonds. He said, you've almost convinced me to be a Christian. And he said, I wish everybody in this room was not just almost, but completely converted as I am, and were exactly as I am, with the single exception of the fact that I'm wearing chains. And the rest of you aren't. Verse 30. And when he had spoken this, the king rose up, and the governor, and Bernice, and they that sat with them. And when they were gone aside, they talked between themselves, saying, This man does nothing worthy of death or even of bonds. Then said Agrippa to Festus, This man I would have set at liberty if he hadn't appealed to Caesar. We're going to stop there and pick up at 27, because they're going to go sailing for Italy next week. So here he is. He's got, every time he goes before these mighty political figures, they end up saying, there's nothing wrong with this man. There's nothing evil in this man. He has them practically convinced. For 2 years, Felix calls for him all the time. He preaches to Felix and Felix's wife, Drusilla. And then when Felix died and Festus came, he goes and preaches to Festus. And then Festus goes and gets King Agrippa. And while Festus thinks he's mad, King Agrippa hears everything he says. And by the time he gets done, Festus is so impressed with Paul that he says, I want to let the guy go free, just like Felix wanted the guy to go free. Everybody wants the guy to go free, but he can't go free for one reason. You know what the reason is? He appealed to Caesar. And why did he do that? Because the Lord met him that one night and said, you're going to testify of me in Rome.
Well, he said, well, this must be the door.
This must be the door. That's exactly right. He humbled himself completely to the sovereignty of God. He was told to go out and preach to everyone that he could come in contact with. Get out there and preach the word of God. Get out there and preach the gospel, starting with the Israelites and moving out into the Gentiles. And for 2 years, he was kept in bonds under Felix for 2 years. How impatient would you be if you were sitting there saying, now, wait a minute, God himself told me, Jesus himself met with me and told me to get out there and preach. And he told me I'm going to Rome to preach. To the mightiest people on earth, I'm going to preach. And for 2 years, he's sitting in bonds going nowhere. Talk about succumbing to the absolute sovereignty of God's timing and God's providence and God's will. And it's going to get worse. Paul's going to get shipwrecked. And he's going to end up in a dungeon in Rome. And yet he is the strongest voice for Christianity on planet Earth at that time.